The banana hugs are under the microscope for this episode. Is their science podcast solidifying, or is it still a gas? Find out on this episode of America's Next Top Podcaster. Welcome to America's Next Top Podcaster. I'm Brian Ibbett. It's Science Podcast Week, and after their win last week, the Banana Hugs, Jen, Shane, and Tyler, are wanting to keep the momentum going. We'll listen in on their science coaching session with special guest Dr. Kiki, their coaching session with Tom, and we'll end the show with their entry for this week's challenge. But before we get to any of that, let's talk to Shane. I'm here with Shane from the Banana Hugs. How you doing, Shane?
Not too bad. How about you, Brian?
Good. So you guys came out on top in the reviews and the judging last night, although it was kind of I don't know if I'd say it's a full win, because Drew was pretty much anti everything that everybody did last night.
Yeah, I mean, and in terms of jury, though, I think we all pretty much agreed that we took it as a compliment.
Yeah. You got him emotional, and that's a thing with jury. If you can get him, even yelling is good. Yeah,
that's true.
Right. And you guys got to have a little bit of a bonus today, some time with Dr. Kiki. What'd you think of that?
We did. Yeah. No, I think we got some good information out of that. At first, I think our question kind of, she wasn't really sure how to answer initially, but eventually we got some info out of her.
Right. It was a great question that I think, boy, if she would have given you guys here's a great story that I've never used for my show. Boy, talk about the golden ticket. But good. I'm glad she didn't make things that easy for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to have you working a little bit hard on this.
Right.
What kinds of takeaways, even with the win yesterday, what kind of takeaways do you guys have from last night's judging elimination?
Well, from last night, it's kind of hard to say still, because we don't have, I mean, we only have our own episode still as context, I guess. But, you know, it sounded like more or less to kind of keep doing what we were doing in terms of that. It sounds like, you know, the high production value really paid off. And, you know, on jury side of things, you know, I kind of understood the comment about, you know, maybe at first there was some high intensity initially, and then maybe it wasn't as passionate then later on. I totally get that. And that was just kind of hard to do, but I understood the feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes it tough when everybody's kind of getting thrown over the coals in the same breath. But, and who knows, you know, if there would have been a clear winner for jury last night, maybe, I don't know, would have affected the screaming. We all come to expect that from jury. Well, moving forward, so we've got Science Week, and how good does your team feel about that?
I think we feel pretty good so far. We kind of bounced around quite a bit in terms of what we were gonna, the direction we were kind of thinking of going, but I think we've landed on one that I have always kind of been curious about. And in terms of accidental discoveries, or, you know, serendipitous sort of moments.
And I love that as a topic. I love that as an idea.
Yeah, it's, you know, it stems all the way back. I don't even remember if I heard about this in, you know, science class when I was younger or not. I think I heard it from my brother initially, the whole how Velcro or hook and loop. If we don't want to use brand names here, technically came to be with the guy's dog and burrs on his fur. So that kind of a thing. That's just as an example, because I think that one's probably been overdone quite a bit.
Sure. I think everybody knows that story. And, but that's the kind of direction you're going with the discovery, the scientific discovery, somebody just doing an everyday thing and all of a sudden realizing, oh, this is interesting.
Right.
Cool. Very cool. Are you guys thinking about going conversational? Are you thinking about going lecture style? I imagine no science fiction future
I mean, we've been joking about that. I think Tyler's been joking about the whole time in space. No. maybe don't want to repeat that right away.
Right. Are you going to be working on some theme music? Because, you know, you guys all had theme music in that first week, and very little theme music in week two. I was a little disappointed. I really wanted a good, catchy theme.
Yeah, well, maybe one too many themes this last episode. Maybe not a theme, traditional theme song per se, but lots of different,
little... Right, yeah, you had the walk-up music for each of the different mm-hmm. candidates. Right, oh gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I literally just now, I still have it up here working on a little something right away. Very good.
So. Excellent. I can't wait. You guys have time with Tom tomorrow. What kinds of things are you going to be hitting him up for?
Oh, that's a good question. We might still need to. I think we've got some questions here. Let's see. How to keep it entertaining and educational.
Good.
Oh, one of the things. Right. So sorry to answer your question before. I think we're thinking story driven more than anything. We talked about doing something conversational more. I think we have to go tell a story here.
I think so too.
Primarily. So one of those things is how to make a flashback or a historical reenactment kind of work best.
Oh, nice. Kind of like drunk history, but the science version, and maybe not the drunk version.
that topic actually came up at one point, but yeah, I think that's the part we're maybe avoiding
the drunk part. And Tom, you know, he's got some experience, science and technology hand in hand. He's been doing tech stories for a long time. So you guys will get that extra bonus of talking to him with something that's a little closer to his wheelhouse than a point counterpoint podcast or an introduction podcast.
Right.
Very good. Well, I'm excited to hear what questions you have for him tomorrow. And I'm excited to hear what you guys turn out at the end of the week.
Cool.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Shane. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
Welcome to your coaching session. Congratulations on winning the challenge. You guys get some time with an expert in the field of science podcasting. They don't get much more expert than this. Dr. Kiki hosts a show called This Week in Science, and it is truly a kick-ass science podcast. It even says it in the title. Tyler, Shane, and Jen, I'm going to start the clock here in just a moment, but welcome Dr. Kiki.
Hello, it's great to be here.
I will start the timer right now and mute myself and let you guys go.
Awesome.
So go for it with your
questions. I was going to say, Tyler, did you want to shoot with the first questions that we had?
Yeah, so we have to do a science podcast. What do you think is your favorite little-known science story?
Oh, interesting. Favorite little known science story. I was not ready for that question. Good job, Stump the Mentor. I think that there are little known science stories all over the place in how science gets done and how things actually become discoveries. There are stories like, I don't know how well widely known it is, but the discoverers of DNA, Watson and Crick, they actually were much better discoverers of the notebooks of Rosalind Franklin, who actually took the first images of DNA and its structure. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. So there are some of the stories of the people who are doing the science and the interactions between them, I think, it gives that human element to the science itself.
Yeah, that's definitely what we want to try and focus on is, you know, something that is the human side and telling a story.
Yeah. There's also, I know true crime is like a big popular podcast topic these days. And there are some really, really interesting stories within different fields of science of researchers who kind of went crazy and didn't do great things. And so there are stories of murders. There are stories of drug abuse, of these kind of human failings also that are kind of interesting.
Do you know any of those off the top of your head? Like specific ones?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember this one that I heard about a while back but I'm not remembering the name of the researcher, but there was theft of data and falsification of results, and a researcher who went missing, and I believe there was embezzlement involved. It was a chemist of some sort. You know, it kind of goes back to the Breaking Bad kind of idea, but there was a chemist involved in that story, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the exact name.
That's all right.
No, that's okay. Appreciate it. We're just trying to kind of get some ideas of kind of what else is out there. Our part of our project, we're leaning towards doing a retelling of stories about, you know, serendipity, like unexpected discoveries in science. And any advice that you would give on how we can make that story, because just telling the story is kind of bleh. Like, how do you make it interesting and engaging while also doing your justice to the science?
Yeah, I think those kind of stories are always interesting because science has so much to do with serendipity. You know, you hear about these physicists who had the bright idea while they were literally taking a shower, you know, or they were on a walk and suddenly they put ideas together that became, you know, these amazing principles of astrophysics or how, you know, the theoretical physics of our universe. There's, you know, the accidental science where you kind of focus on the story of who that the scientist was. So say, I want to say Linus Pauling. No, Linus Pauling, who came up with penicillin. So the discovery of penicillin, he did some things in his plate, his bacterial cultures incorrectly. And one plate ended up with penicillin in it, and it ended up killing other bacterial species. And so it became something that he started looking into. And so it's kind of that observational aspect of scientists. What do they notice that other people don't notice? What did they see that sparked their curiosity to go off in a new direction in their research? You know, kind of, if you come from that, I think, really human perspective of who were they, what were they doing, and why did they notice that particular thing and run with it? It starts to become a more interesting story. And also, if that one thing that you're talking about has a real impact on, you know, modern life that we live, you know, it really makes that connection to the people who might be listening.
Yeah, I think we're one of the thoughts we had was maybe to do almost sort of a flashback sort of recreation.
Uh-huh.
Historical reenactment.
There you go.
Yeah. I think that was sort of one of the stronger points on how to sort of tell the story. And I think we're, aside from that, we're still exploring how to best tell a story as a whole, I guess.
Yeah, you don't want it to sound like I did this report on this scientist and this discovery that happened. You know, like when you do things, it's very engaging. How do you know how far to go with the science side of things without just boring everybody, but making sure that they come away with something interesting?
Yeah, so if we're coming from a storytelling perspective, you really don't want to inundate people with facts. It's more a matter of the facts being part of the story, and part of, you know, telling people the information that they need to be able to understand the story. But you know, you're not trying to be a textbook. If you're telling the story, it's a story. If you're educating, then that is a completely, you know, that's a different angle, and that's a different way of presenting the information. So you want to be able to, you know, convey information that people can maybe go look up later, but you should at least, you know, find ways to, if there are words, jargon that need to be explained, find ways to incorporate that into the script. So, but not in a pedantic way.
Okay, that's a good point.
And that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because that's the one thing I'm nervous about, falling into that trap.
Yeah. I mean, if you think, I mean, so a lot of the really interesting historical reenactments of things, you know, they've got, you know, letters that people wrote to each other, diary entries that maybe give some insight into the thought process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what was that person thinking on that particular day? Oh, it's more humid today than normal, or this weekend has been hotter than normal. And, you know, and then that kind of leads into maybe the scientist's thought process of how heat or humidity would affect bacterial growth and why that would be important. You know, why the weather would be important on this particular day and time, as a, you know, being hot and humid as opposed to being cold or an ice snap.
Yeah, good point.
Okay, so make it about the people. Don't get too pedantic. Any other advice for making a science podcast?
Yeah, I mean, it's really because of the way the advice I'm giving you is really because of the particular project that you're, that it sounds like you want to do. So, you know, it's a story. So you want to make sure that it's, you know, has a beginning, a middle, an end. And I think one of the fun things, though, is trying to convey the reality of science, that it doesn't really have an end, that it continues.
Very good. And that is time. 10 minutes went fast.
It did. Yeah,
it was one of the questions that I had, and I'm going to ask it just, you know, because I think this is an important thing about doing a show like this, should the audience be the person that the podcasters are talking to, or should they be talking to each other? Do you find it more engaging when the story is being told to the other hosts on the show, or being told to the audience in the less conversational style?
Right. So it depends on your audience, mm-hmm. right? If your audience is there to hear a conversation between people who maybe are, you know, experts on a subject, they're there to learn something. And, you know, you can start out the podcast talking to the audience, but then it's a conversation between the people who are there. But if you're telling it with storytelling, it's different. And if you're really telling a story, you're telling that story to your audience. And so you want to think of your audience as the person you're talking to. You're bringing them into this world that you're creating.
Makes sense. Great. Well, Dr. Keehy, thank you so much for your time. And thank you to Jen, Shane, and Tyler for being available for this. Look forward to hearing what they come up with. And Dr. Keehy, I hope we'll be able to see you at the end of the week for the judging. Let's listen in on their coaching session with Tom Merritt.
Hey, congratulations. How are you feeling?
We could breathe. Sort of.
Great effort, great world building, fun bits. Loved the Ace Detect bit, of course. I was laughing out loud in a drugstore listening to it. Everyone thought I was crazy. So
awesome. That was Tyler.
Well done. Congratulations. Okay. Now, party's over. We have to focus on next week. What do you think you could have improved on from last week?
I think the biggest thing was pushing the comedy. Jenny's comment was exactly what we felt, and we just needed to clean some of that up. I think that there were some opportunities for just really just cleaning. I felt really good about the script that we wrote. I felt like that was heavy, but good.
I'm gonna tell you guys something that I'm telling all the teams, which is after a couple of weeks here, you're starting to realize what things each of you is good at and you as a team are good at. And you kind of just mentioning that, Jen, right now is like, yeah, that's right. You need to start figuring out like, oh, okay, I can do this. I can do that. Reading scripts is a skill. Writing scripts is a skill. Being funny is a skill. Acting, which you had to do in this, is a skill. Creating production elements, all of that. So you have to be honest with yourselves and each other about which of those you're good at now and start building your ideas to capitalize on the skills in your team. And then you push your boundaries because you know what your boundaries are. It's not pushing the boundaries to be outside the boundaries. So you're starting to get enough of a groove as a team that you can figure that out.
So that it kind of leads us perfectly into kind of the question for this is that this, what we're kind of doing this time is very kind of a departure, right? That was a very produced bit that we did last week. We kind of want to bring it down to something that honestly is a podcast I would be cool making. And part of the idea we had was the science of unintended discovery, right? Serendipity, talking about like different, having a show where you talk about the story of those different discoveries. Now, our first question about it is that, and we're talking about science, is it still count as a science podcast? Is it too history if we're really talking about like kind of, hey, this is where this device wasn't there and then this is what happened? And
yeah, those questions always scare me because I'm not the judges or the person running this. But I think that history of science, and I would argue very vociferously that history of science is science. And there's plenty of history of science podcasts out there that I think count as science. So the question is, unintended discovery, are your examples very clearly scientists who were working on something and took advantage of the discovery, not paranormal, you know, stuff like that? As long as you're very solidly in the world of science in each one of your examples, I think that would work.
Yeah. So we had a list of all of the, there's like a bajillion unintended ones, and we didn't want to do any of the obvious ones like post-its and the things that people know about were like, oops, that happened. Mm-hmm. So the one that we're gearing towards is the pacemaker because I was kind of dumbfounded to find out that pacemakers were used like in Roman times, like a version of it. And then this guy happened upon it. And so that's really interesting to me that it's something that is a discovery. And that's, I think, why we were kind of gravitating towards that one. We had some other thoughts, but the hard part is how to tell it and be educational and talk about it without it just sounding very pedantic. So one of the ways that we tried to do that was maybe we're like, okay, do we make it be a conversation between Tyler and I? We're like, I'm educating Tyler. And then do we do flashbacks, like historical reenactment? Like, is that too silly? Is that still a way of breaking it up so it's not just me talking about pacemakers?
right. No, these are the right questions to ask. And reenactments are great if you're like, we have two actors on the team who can nail a reenactment and it'll be enjoyable and entertaining and totally illustrate the point. But if you are honest with yourselves and you're like, man, we could do it, but I'm not sure it's the greatest, then there's other ways to do it. So that's the question you need to have as a team is, okay, what are the various ways that we can keep this light? Maybe the conceit is you're educating someone, you're having a conversation where someone is asking like, where did pacemakers come from? And the job of that person is to just ask questions and the other person react them. Again, that's script writing and that's reading. So then you have to ask yourselves, okay, do we have the right people to do script writing and reading? But there are lots of ideas you can use to make what is essentially a storytelling, a very clear history telling podcast. If you figure out what you guys are good at and put that together with some sound effects and production elements, because just the pitch of, did you know pacemakers were invented in Roman times? How did we get them today? I'm in. I'm ready to listen, right? So that's half the battle right there. Then it's a matter of just writing an informative, accurate, and entertaining script.
Right. So that comes into, like, I think Shane's foray, right? Shane is very strong when it comes to sound. What kind of sound scape, can you build on something like that and not have it just sound cheesy? Because I'm thinking 80s science videos in it, and I don't know.
Yeah, take every 80s science video and do what it doesn't, and then you're fine. See, cut out all the things that don't look like Play-Doh, and you have a sculpture of Play-Doh. So your head's in the right place. So light sound effects, where it's like, you know, workshop sound effect when you're talking about a workshop or the wind blowing, stuff like that. It might sound cheesy, but if you use them sparingly, it can work. It also might be possible for you to find some accounts from the time or excerpts mm-hmm. from other historians and then have a different voice read them. So maybe instead of the Q&A, you've just got one voice narrating the story of the pacemaker, and you're bringing in other voices to describe the events and the quotes.
Yeah, because that's like one of the nervousnesses is that I almost feel like if we do too many, I'm getting this real feeling that if we do too many voices, it's going to be hard. But then there's only three of us, and what if we're not all on there? What if it's just me talking and then maybe a little bit of something
else?
Oh,
yeah. Not every one of you. I mean, that's something you're going to deal with now. Is not every one of you is going to be based on every episode, or, nor should you be. You're going to find other things to do in production and research and writing that you can use to say, like, yes, I contributed, even though you don't hear me. And that's an important division of roles to make.
Okay.
All right, guys, that was my list.
And even, you know what? Even if you have one voice telling the story, who's very good at reading, and one voice just doing the excerpts, the listener starts to catch on, like, oh, that voice is telling me what the books say, what the accounts say, and the first voice is telling me the story. That can work.
I guess I do have one question. If you feel... So I used two examples, one being the way that flashbacks were done in, just as a basic example, in Lost, where they're maybe kind of just this quick kind of flashback mm-hmm. versus mm-hmm. having a more of a lengthy, I forget what example I had for that one, but more where the flashback was more of the focus of it. If you think, you know, which way would work better?
I mean, if y'all think you're killer actors and can pull off recreations, then make them long, right? But if you're at all worried about that, shorter exposes you to less criticism. So that's the way I would balance that equation there, because a full reenactment podcast with the right cast and the right writing could knock their socks off. It's just a matter of whether you're like, okay, can we execute that? And there's nothing wrong with creating a more straight ahead narrated story with brief reenactments that are quick and fun, like you're talking about, and don't give the judges or any listener a chance to get bored or worried or critical.
Yeah, that's the hard part, because you have mm-hmm. to give some fact. You don't want to leave people without information. So I guess the big thing is being really, really diligent about only having the most interesting information. Absolutely. Yeah. If we're going to list out facts, they have to be the most interesting stuff.
Well, turn your facts into a story. That's the key for who's writing this, is being able to say like this, because this is a compelling topic that you're talking about. So there's no reason you shouldn't be able to weave a good narrative.
Okay. Any other advice? Oh, Tyler, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to have anything there.
No, I mean, you asked all the ones that we had written down.
Do you have any that you didn't rent, Diane?
Who's your favorite Tyler, team?
I was going to say, Tyler wants to know what your favorite food is.
Obviously, y'all are my favorite team. But I bet they say that to all the teams.
You probably do. So
this is a tricky one, because I can tell you guys are nervous about whether you are going to pick the right direction. But I know if you really think about it, each of you is saying, I can do this or I can do that. You just got to hash out that conversation, honestly, and you'll figure out, because you got a lot of options and you've got a really solid premise, which is the key.
Let's listen in on their work sessions.
Yeah,
so I have a couple big thoughts, and I'm feeling pretty big about them. Like I'm feeling pretty... Like, I put a lot of thought into this, and I really feel like for this to be good, it's gonna have to be scaled back. So I don't know if that means a voice and maybe a little bit. Like, I don't even know how...
I just am really feeling like that's the right approach. I feel like if we try to force, I don't know if the historical reenactment part of it is us forcing something in there that doesn't need to be in there and is going to take away from what it is. I hate to go back to it, but culinary capers, like, yeah. I'm trying to remember what else they did on that, but I really almost feel like this is a cool podcast and I would totally make it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to do this, and I would also love to have somebody do production and make it sound better and put sound effects in and put things in and put the right music in. And I don't even know what kind of an intro song you do. I tried to listen to science podcasts, by the way, the last 2 days.
Yeah.
And everything in the fucking science category is just like, faith or science, let's duke it out on this weird fucking thing where we take your money. Give us money, guys. We've been doing this podcast for 10 years and we all know that these, like, beings are real and these photons are... I was like, oh my God, this is like... I don't know. It's like a hotline version of podcasts. Like,
I think we need to have, like, increasingly, like, damning things that we say about ourselves. And then go, damn it, don't put that in. I swear to God, you put that in.
Hey, this could actually be the most interesting session if he includes this.
Hi everyone, Tyler here, and welcome to another episode of Tyler Takes on Science, the show where I invite some of my smart friends to come on and tell me some of the cool science stories that they know. This week we have the Jen on to tell me about the pacemaker. Hi Jen.
Hi Tyler. Just to be clear, you made me do all the research and you said you were going to do some of it yourself.
Let's dive right in, shall we? So the pacemaker was discovered in like the 80s or something, right?
Actually, the pacemaker is a device that was officially invented in 1950, but there are a lot of really cool inventions that precede it. Without those milestones, the pacemaker wouldn't exist.
History. Okay, I can swallow a little bit. How far back are we talking?
I'll tell you what, let me get through all this, and then there's beer at the end.
You had me at beer.
So you might think that the pacemaker is a 20th century invention, but its earliest origins actually date as far back as the ancient Romans. The modern pacemaker, as the dedicated medical device that we know today, is the result of an unintended discovery by an electrical engineer more interested in pasteurizing beer. Woo-hoo! Anyway, let's talk about some fundamentals. Electrotherapy has a simple core concept, the use of an outside source of electricity to stimulate human tissue in various ways to produce a beneficial therapeutic effect. This has shown a prolonged and sometimes halting development throughout the ages, at time being looked upon as mysterious magic produced by complex machines. The ancient Romans actually treated patients suffering from pain and acute gout with shocks from electric rays and other electrically charged sea creatures.
Shocking.
Terrible pun.
What's a pun?
So jumping to the 1600s, physician William Harvey restarted an arrested pigeon's heart by flick of his finger. And with that, the idea of surviving death by restarting the heart was born.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
Pretty cool, actually. Even cooler, in 1775, the Danish physicist Nicolaj Alvgaard conducted the first studies on the effects of electrical energy when applied to the body. He placed electrodes on the side of a hen's head and applied an electric discharge, which caused the hen to fall dead. Application of electrodes over various parts of the hen's body failed to reanimate the bird until they were placed across the chest. And in this position, they presumably defibrillated the heart, after which the hen staggered onto its feet and walked away. Experiments continued throughout the 19th century, along with the advancements in electrical technology. Basically, people kept zapping animals and themselves to see what happens.
That's my favorite part of science.
Of course it is. In 1882, German physician Hugo von Zinzen had the opportunity to experiment on a 46-year-old female patient who had had a chest tumor that had been excised together with the left anterior part of her thoracic wall, thus exposing her heart.
A what now?
Basically, she had a big hole in her chest so you could poke at her heart through a thin layer of skin.
Ah, gross.
So von Zinzen stimulated her heart using electric current and could change her heart rate at will. It was essentially trial and error while poking around in her chest. at the time, no one really knew, understood how the cardiovascular system worked, and people still just dropped dead and nobody really knew why. It wasn't until 1887 when Augustus Waller invented an electrocardiograph, or EKG machine. This allowed a heartbeat to be recorded in real time.
Oh, I know that one. That's the one that goes beep, beep, beep on TV.
Yep. And that brings us to the first electronic device specifically built as a cardiac pacemaker.
Finally.
John Alexander Hobbs was an electrical engineer. And in 1941, he was recruited to the Division of Radio and Electrical Engineering by the National Research Council based in Ottawa. There he studied the use of radio frequency reheating for pasteurizing beer. He was so dedicated to this goal that when he was transferred to the Banting Institute in Toronto in 1949, he saw it as, quote, an annoying interruption to this vital task.
So no offense to Hearts, but I agree with him. I mean, it's beer.
All right, beer is great, but more interestingly, in a moment of serendipity, Hobbs observed that an electrical impulse would cause the heart to contract, and that repetitive stimuli, that is, pacing, would allow this to occur over a prolonged time. Hobbs and others went on to develop a series of experiments to refine this process for pacemaker-induced cardiac stimulation. With the parameters derived from these initial experiments, Hobbs returned to the National Research Council in 1950 to design and build the first pacemaker prototype. The result was a boxy machine that could insert a catheter through a vein and send an electric impulse to regulate a heartbeat, the first practical artificial pacemaker defibrillator. Unfortunately, though, these devices were large, clunky machines that had to be plugged into an outlet.
Hope you have a long extension cord.
Luckily, the technology grew by leaps and bounds. The first battery-operated wearable pacemaker was invented in 1957, and the first totally implantable pacemaker in 58, and the first long-term correction of heart block with a self-contained implantable pacemaker in 1960.
Hang on, what kind of batteries did they use? Because that was like in the 60s, and they didn't have lithium batteries back then.
Yeah, you might actually like this one. So the batteries were recharged by induction, similar to wireless charging pads for modern phones. So the battery life was pretty good too. Charging was only needed for 12 hours once a week.
They had wireless chargers back in the 60s? And my phone just got that technology like 5 years ago.
That's how science goes sometimes. The therapeutic endpoint of cardiac stimulation shifted from saving life to enhancing its quality and simplifying follow-up. Pacemakers and their leads could be implanted without a thoracotomy and without general anesthesia. The first pacemakers paced only the ventricle or bottom chamber of the heart, and all they could do was generate a regular electrical pulse with no variation. The word physiologic was first used in pacing to describe a pacemaker that could sense the patient's underlying rhythm and not compete with it. It was called a demand pacemaker. It would only generate a pulse if the pacemaker sensed that the patient's own heart had not beat on its own. And by 1972, one company even introduced nuclear pacemakers to the market.
Really? I guess they tried to make everything nuclear-powered back then.
Yeah, it had a radioactive isotope inside to power it instead of a traditional battery. But eventually, lithium batteries became standard, and the nuclear pacemakers never caught on.
Yeah, that was probably for the best.
You're probably right, Tyler. And the tech is constantly improving. It's getting smaller and yet more adaptable to address more and more specific patient needs. One proposed idea for the next generation of pacemakers would be to remove the internal battery entirely and power itself by cardiac and pulmonary motion. This would provide an inexhaustible source of energy through the life of a patient.
And 50 years from then, my phone will get the same no battery technology.
The pacemaker is an important life-saving device with over 200,000 implanted in the U.S. every year. Remember our beer-loving friend John Hobbs?
Yeah.
He himself required pacemakers to regulate his own heart. His first was implanted in 1984 and a second in 1997, inspiring one of the most satisfying headlines ever written. Quote, Canadian engineer left to his own devices.
I thought it was my job to make the bad jokes. Well, thank you, Jen, for coming on. That was more interesting than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it wasn't so bad this time.
Join me next week for the story of how the search for an elixir for immortality resulted in the discovery of gunpowder. Hey, Jen, there is one more thing that you can help me with. Can you get my VCR to stop blinking 12?
Why do you even still own a VCR?
That was Tyler Takes on Science, the science podcast entry from the Banana Hugs. On the next episode, the judges will review all three podcasts and decide our winning team for the week, and we'll say goodbye to one of our contestants. It'll be like helium. You won't be able to put it down. All this and more next time on America's Next Top Podcaster.